You know, as children's pastor, I always got upset with my senior pastor when he always forgot to dismiss the kids too. So, you know, it works out. Well, good morning. We'll start over again. I'm kind of nervous this morning. Sorry. Nervous in the sense, one, I haven't done this in a while. Two, part of it, you know, maybe if I feel maybe my own preparedness, maybe. We were in St. Louis this weekend and visiting college tours, and yes, we're about that age of doing all those fun things, and it doesn't seem possible. And then the taekwondo tournament on Saturday, and didn't get home till this morning. You know, those type of things. And so just feeling a little anxiousness of how all the pieces are going to come together. And it's also the last Sunday of the liturgical, the church calendar, which is exciting. It could be very easy for me to just stand up here and say, this is Christ the King Sunday, let's just celebrate. And we should celebrate. But there's more to what's going on than just setting off the fireworks. Now, I don't know about you, you can interact with me a little bit. How do you celebrate New Year's Day or New Year's Eve? Sleeping. Yes. A puzzle. Very good. So you start early in the evening and hopefully it's finished by midnight?
Usually like 8 a.m.
Very good. I like it. I like that tradition. Puzzles. Family time, basically. Working together. Good. Anybody else? Anybody else stay up late and watch the ball drop 3 times? When the kids were younger, we used to watch it at like 10 o'clock or whatever and tell them it was, hey, it's midnight, go to bed. I guess it's only an hour difference, isn't it? So it must be 11 o'clock. Whatever it is. That means I get to go to bed. Woo! And then we usually stay up and watch it again. And anybody else? Does anybody shoot fireworks? Yeah, there's a handful that shoot fireworks. Yeah, there's parts of town, they shoot guns up in the air. You know, that's we used to do that in Nebraska. You go outside and you shoot. Go out and shoot things. Just never know what it was going to hit. We always used to tell them, though, what goes up must come down, so be careful. Anybody else? Anybody else have any New Year's traditions?
Anybody? Our kids go to grandma's house, and we always have date night.
Sweet. I love it. Absolutely. Hence, stay up and have pizza. Hey, that's a good one. My son might want to adopt that one. Well, good. There's so many great ways of celebrating. You know, you see across the globe of how people celebrate New Year's. Some people lie in the streets of New York, and I think that'd be a phenomenal experience to do one time. Yeah. And you see the whole tradition that you see the Chinese New Year, how elaborate, and it's a little different time than our January 1st, but you know, it's, you see all these different celebrations, and we in the church, we kind of go, yep, it's the end of church year, let's move on. Because in the church, this is a real confusing time. The end of the church year is a real confusing times in our minds. You go to the stores, you see nothing but Christmas trees, Christmas lights, Christmas music. Too early. My daughter would rather have Christmas music year-round, which is fine. That's her preference. So it's confusing. We get caught up in this. We're already in our minds, already gearing up for the shopping and buying and the Advent, preparing and really, in the church year, we're not there. The church year has a nice flow. It really does. You have Advent, of a preparation. Then you have the celebration of Christmas. And then you move into Epiphany. So you have this kind of this anticipation low, and you move into this high of Christmas and Epiphany, and then you kind of go back down again, and you have Lent. And then you start moving back up again and towards Easter, which, you know, for the Christians, that's a high, but then you look at the cross and the thorns, and you go kind of, oh, is that really a high? But for the Christian world, it is. And then you move into Pentecost, another season that gets overlooked by a lot of churches. And then you have ordinary time, time where life happens, a time intentionally in the church where it's meant and its whole purpose is for growth. That's why the color of ordinary time is green. It's for growth. And you have bumps and rocks to traverse. And you got things in your path. And as a community, we navigate those. Some days are really good days, and some days aren't so good days in ordinary time. And then all of a sudden, you come to this white and gold day. Today, Christ the King Sunday. Now, this year is a little different than most years. This year, Christ the King, let me back. Normally, Christ the King Sunday falls on the same weekend that Thanksgiving is. So it's Thursday, Thanksgiving, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's usually where Christ the King Sunday falls. It kind of makes sense, this whole big Thanksgiving theme. Well, this year it's a week earlier, just the way that the church calendar flows. So we're really kind of in this weird time. So I want you to take a moment, just with your neighbors. If you want to speak out loud, I don't care. That's fine too. Let's just take a moment to reflect before we launch into where the scriptures have us go. Let's reflect over this past year. The goods, the bads, the uglies. So just with your neighbors, or if you have something really, thing that you want to voice out, share that. So go, take a moment, reflect, think over this last year, the good, the bads, the uglies. This is more of an extrovert activity versus an introvert activity, just so you know. We're reflecting goods, the bads, the uglies over the past year. Good, good. This is all life of church, isn't it? Yes. Sharing this in the life of church. You know, we kind of do this on a weekly basis. We're supposed to anyway. When we pass the offering plate and we share our stories with one another, we're really reflecting over that course of the week. And then here today, we can now reflect over a little bit longer period of time over the course of the year. So why is it important to do this? Why is it important that we do this?
Whether it's going to celebrate with you or mourn with you.
Absolutely. Definitely. It's a chance to remember that we can be together in this community. We can celebrate together, grieve or mourn together, even continue to walk and journey with one another. Very good. It's important. Now, it's not a task that let's just stay here in the past. But it's an opportunity, I think, for us to really reflect about Christ the King. How is it that Christ that is with us, this word that we're going to start hearing starting next week, continuously for the next 4 weeks, this God Emmanuel, this God that is with us. And honestly, I use that phrase all the time in my work as a chaplain. I am always talking to my families that are, I'm a hospice chaplain, and as I work and help our families that are dealing with loss, these insurmountable tasks that they have in front of them, that we have a God, Emmanuel, that we have a God that is with us, that understands their grief, a God that understands their heartache, and that understand that hole that is being created by a loss in their family. We also have that God, as I work with our families, that is with us as they celebrate because their loved one had lived a fantastic life and they knew God and they knew Jesus and that they're going to be reunited with them once again. And so this that God is with us that will carry them through as they celebrate this reunion. All right. This is also an odd Sunday, because as we want to celebrate, as we want to give thanks, as we just want to sing songs of thanksgiving, as we want to sing songs of just the high exaltation, we have this passage of Scripture that we've kind of been walking through that takes us to the cross. So, which is an Easter passage or a Lenten passage. But yet we find ourselves right before Advent, towards this ordinary time, this end of the church year time, walking towards the cross. So it's, again, kind of confusing in our minds if you really follow the liturgical year. But we're going to look at a passage today. We've heard this passage almost every Lenten season as we journey towards the cross, but oftentimes we skip over this section. We graze through it. Graze through it? No, we blaze through it. There you go. We blaze through it. Today we're going to graze through it. This day gives us that opportunity to stop and really look at this specific passage. So, our lesson from the Gospel of John describes a scene in which Jesus, having been arrested, is brought before the governor of the province to be questioned. The governor asks one too many questions. And so the exchange goes something like this. And everybody know the ending of that line, right? What is the truth? Anybody know the end of that line? Huh? What? I heard it. That's the end of that line. What is the truth? You want to know the truth? You can't handle the truth. Great movie. Great movie. A Few Good Men, if you're wanting to know what it was. You know, even in that interchange of Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, the questioning becomes more and more intense. And that's when they finally yell out, "You cannot handle the truth." So this conversation between Pilate and Jesus could get equally as intense. Now, I don't think Jesus probably was that intense like Tom Cruise was, maybe, but they get to the climax of the examination, and Pilate finally yells at Jesus, "What is truth?" So what is truth? And then, so unfortunately, just as it was with Tom Cruise, that is the one question too many. The wrong question. The bad question, if you will. I don't mean it's a bad question in and of itself, if it weren't for the context in which it was asked. It might even be the best line of the Bible, I'm not sure. It might be even a good title for the book. Instead of calling it the Holy Bible, maybe it should be titled, What is Truth? I don't know. But the book, the Bible, it was written to help us to live our lives in the light of God's truth. So Jesus himself, in this very same gospel, in the moment of high drama and passion, says to himself, I am the truth. But when Jesus was giving that answer, he's talking to Thomas at a moment when Thomas was very troubled, self-doubt, deeply engaged in the question of finding his own faith. But that's not where Pilate is coming from. On the contrary, when Pilate is asking, what is truth? He really isn't asking a question at all. He's really making a statement, a pronouncement, a cynical commentary on the meaninglessness of life. It's a way of saying there is no God. There is no purpose in our lives. This is from Pilate's perspective. We come from chance and we're going nowhere, so it doesn't really matter what we do. When Pilate is saying, what is truth? He's simply implying that it makes no difference whether we cheat or act with honor, whether we act out of self-interest or are motivated out of a concern for the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Pilate does not necessarily believe that justice should even try to be dispensed fairly or equitably, but thinks that there should be blatantly one kind of judgment for the rich and the powerful, and another kind of judgment for the poor and the marginalized. That's the reason why Pilate asked only once what Jesus had done. But he asked twice if he was a king. That's the kind of truth that Pilate believed in. He believed that what a person does is not nearly as important as who the person is. Now, if you recall, in the initial information that Pilate received, Pilate never bothered to find out what Jesus was supposed to have done. He simply based his judgment on the discovery that the label, the King of the Jews, was a title that was not valid for Jesus' political position. So for Pilate, the thing that condemned Jesus was Jesus' statement that his kingdom was not of this world. If it had been of this world, if Jesus had been powerful and influential in the way that kings and kingmakers of this world are, Pilate would have never turned him over to the mob. And so here in our part of the world, in the Americas, we have a hard time with this understanding of kingship. In fact, part of our country was born out of the revolt of having a king. Now we all had the Disney movies and the other stories that talk to us about kings and princesses. And even here more recently, we kind of can still I don't want to use the word fantasize. That might not be the right word. But with Prince William and Kate, we kind of had this new engagement type of, if you will, a new interest in this kingship. Now, even if we don't even have to go too far back to reflect over the world, this past few weeks, we have seen groups try to influence power, use their power against other groups. We've had terrorist groups, and we've had other groups, and just a lot of nastiness. A lot of ways that we assert power. In some ways, that's kind of what offends Pilate. Jesus, this King of the Jews. But he was humble, meek. You didn't come riding in town and on all the chariots and all the horses with all the soldiers. You didn't come with all the pomp and circumstance to assert your power. The crown is not a crown of jewels, and you know, it's not the debate of which crown that the princess is going to wear. Well, that was Queen Catherine's crown of which one are you going to choose? Jesus chose the crown of thorns. Body broken. And it offended Pilate. Pilate The world that you and I live in at times is not so very different in its thinking from the world in which Jesus and Pilate lived. People still like to be thought of as important, popular. People still want to be powerful, influential. If we had kings and queens in this country, ordinary people would dream of joining the ranks of royalty. Many people in America dream of becoming famous, hitting the jackpot, or getting a big return on our investments, or being important and influential in our own community. So how then is Pontius Pilate different from us? He felt the same way. He was an elected official. He was the governor of a region. He was a VIP in his community. And he wanted to stay that way. He was not about to risk losing his power and influence over this nobody, this unimportant troublemaker named Jesus. I think that's why he questioned Jesus so intensely. He wanted to see just what he was made of. And we know the truth about what Pontius Pilate thought about Jesus. He thought, this man Jesus is a fool. He doesn't get it. He's a dreamer, a visionary, an idealist. He's naive about the real world. He's probably innocent of wrongdoing because he never learned that you have to bend the rules a little to get what you want. Pilate thought Jesus was one of those harmless and insignificant little people who never wised up and caught on to all the crooked little tricks that the powerful people know and practice. Pilate thought that Jesus had no clue about what it meant to be governor, much less how to be an emperor or a king. Pilate thought, this man isn't guilty of wrongdoing. Why, he doesn't have a political bone in his body. He's definitely not one of the ruling class. He's not a threat. He's no Caesar. He's no king. He is no importance at all. That's the way Pilate thought. And that's a way a lot of people in this world think. Jesus knew that, and hence his response, my kingdom is not of this world. So the question out of all of this for us today, and maybe you've heard this question before, but what a great day on Christ the King Sunday to think about it. What do you think? Is Christ Jesus really our King of Kings? The truth is, Pilate and much of the world give only lip service to Jesus. And in the end, Pilate said, I do not find this man to be guilty of any wrongdoing. But then he turned around and handed Jesus over to the lynch mob. But what else did Jesus say? What else did Pilate say? He said this, do you want me to set free for you the King of the Jews? There's those words again. They're coming off of Pilate's lips, the King of the Jews. So we would initially think, oh yes, he thinks that he's this, so he's this king. Pilate didn't believe him to be king. What about you? What about our church? What about our group of people that we call New Beginnings? Are we like Pontius Pilate? Do we say one thing with our lips, but then believe something else in our hearts? Maybe that's not quite the firework question that you wanted on this end of the church year celebration. I think it's an important question. So as we're preparing to begin a new church year, next week in Advent, as we begin that process of ups and downs, of preparation, of Advent, and then celebration of Christmas and Pentecost, and then back to Lent and Easter, Epiphany, and then Lent, and then Easter, and then Pentecost. As we begin the journey over this new year that's about to start, Maybe that's a question that we need to ask. What is truth? We're going to prepare for communion. We've taken a few minutes to reflect, just even with our neighbors, the course of last year. Time of sharing our stories. And part of that is hearing the truth. Over this course here as a congregation, we've had some hardships. Financial, relationships. We've had some celebrations. Financial, relationships. I want you to know that through this truth, this pondering of what is truth, and as we explore that over the course of the next year, that Jesus is the Son of Man. He carries the marks of whips, thorns, and nails. But he's also the Christ, the King, who reigns over all of his eternal kingdom. And if Christ, the King, is also a Son of Man, then so too is Christ the Judge of all. His judgment will be shown with the mercy and compassion of the one who understands from experience what it is to be human. And then when we tell him the story of our lives, we will find ourselves loved, accepted, and healed. So as this church year comes to a close and we look back over our lives, we're finding paths. They're leading us to this place, even when it didn't seem like it. Even in the midst of Pilate asking those hard questions, Jesus still loves, accepts, and heals. So come and take off a piece of bread. Dip it into the cup. Take and eat and remember the truth. And ask yourself, really ponder, what is truth? Are we just giving it lip service, or do we really believe it?